there, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Matt Rory, and you're listening to Careless Whispers here on CLNS Radio. And we've got a fun show for you tonight because I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant at some point, probably sooner rather than later. But first, I turn to Calvin, and I say, Calvin, how you feeling? Did you win any money?
I did not win any money. I never win any money. Now, sometimes I win money, but usually.
If anybody doesn't know why I'm asking him that question, I did not meet Calvin in Los Angeles because he stopped at a casino on the way home. I'm sure you were just looking for an excuse to not have to meet up with me. Thanks a lot.
Any excuse, man. Any excuse to avoid meeting people.
So there's so many people that just don't understand how this could happen. My father being one of them. He's very disappointed in you, Calvin.
Is he? He doesn't even know me. He's saddened.
He's saddened that I didn't get to meet my longtime podcast associate.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ray. I apologize. Sometimes gambling is just more important. It's little things in life.
It is one of those little things that I frankly enjoy. Another thing I enjoy, Calvin, is I guess, visiting your great state of California, because I was there this past weekend. I got in early this morning, and I went to both Celtics games over the weekend, the one where they beat the Warriors and broke that home winning streak, and then where they beat your Lakers, Calvin. And I'm going to start there. I don't need to start at the beginning. I'm going to start in Los Angeles because – let me just tell you something. Kobe Bryant put on a show, and I don't know whether he was doing it because it was the last game against Boston and he was doing it for the fans, or whether he's been putting on shows like this for the past couple of weeks. Am I missing something here? You tell me.
I can sort of – we didn't talk about this pre-show of what direction you might go in with this, but I'm getting the sense of where you might go. I don't want to step on it, but he – just so you know, he'll pull out one of these games. I would say once every – he had a two-week stretch where he was, you know, really shows flashes of the old Kobe. Now it's probably about once every five games.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well
– go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say he's also been in and out of the lineup, though. He's had a lot of shoulder problems.
Right, but hasn't he sort of committed to the last few games here? He's going to play them all, he says, something like that, of that nature.
That's what he said just a game or two ago, shit.
Okay, so the point is that he put on a show on Sunday. The Lakers still lost. This is the best of both worlds for a guy like you. But frankly, Calvin, I want to say that 80% of that building was there to see Kobe, and they didn't even know or care about anybody else on the team. And while some people may say they don't blame them for that, It was very annoying to me. I only found two or three fans around me that seemed like they were knowledgeable Laker fans and seemed like they knew what they were talking about and that they were there for the game and that they love Kobe, of course, but they wanted the team to do well. And I know, put the draft pick aside, because I feel like if you go to a game, you kind of want your team to win, even if it's just that one time all season, okay? So put the draft pick aside. I just couldn't believe how inept a lot of these people seem to be. Is this commonplace? I mean, I just don't understand how they can consider themselves to be diehard fans of one of the greatest franchises in the history of the NBA and just seem to be so clueless on almost every aspect of the game.
Rory, I've had to explain this multiple times because, obviously, I've been involved with the Celtics post-game show for a while now and done shows with many persons who's criticized, you know, me and the Laker fans, or I guess more specifically just the Laker fans in general, for a lack of passion. And I think that what it comes down to is, like, fundamentally different geography. I mean, Boston is essentially a parochial place. You know what I mean? Most of the people in Boston are from Boston, or from out of the country and, you know, migrated to Boston, usually don't go from New York to Boston, for example, or from all over the country to Boston the way you do in L.A. And mm-hmm. Boston is, what is there, 500,000 people, a million people in that area? Or, yeah. You know, in this area, we're talking 20, 30 million people. It's, you know, just that alone, what you're talking about is the people who are inside Staples Center. Now, who's getting season tickets for the Lakers? It's like, I feel like in Boston, it tends to be like a melange of people. You have season tickets to the Celtics.
Right.
You know what's season tickets to the Lakers? Rich people.
That's it?
Who has season tickets to the Lakers. That's it. That's
just the rich people. Well, that's lame.
Just the rich people. Yeah. Well, the market prices itself out accordingly. So basically now, do we have, are there a lot of, like, phony Hollywood types who are just, like, there to see Kobe? Sure, that person exists, and that person is going to be overrepresented at Staples simply because of the market. You know, in a way, like, strangely enough, at Staples, you might even have, like, a more pure crowd of fan of the Clippers, although, you know, Clippers season ticket holders, a lot of them tend to be upper middle class also, but at this point, you can still probably get, you know, good Clippers season tickets at a reasonable rate. Anyway, that's not the point that I'm making. The point that I'm making, really, is that, like, that's sort of the crowd you'll get at Staples, so when you hear the live crowd, it's a certain type of crowd that represents a percentage of what Los Angeles is. When most diehard Laker fans that I've run across are, you know, people who would go to very few Laker games, or they're still diehard. They're like, you know, they'll fight you if you talk bad about the Lakers. I don't feel like that same type of crowd is represented at Staples Center.
There were definitely a large amount of people that were ready to fight just because we were in the stadium, and by we I mean Boston fans in general. There were a couple of guys, Celtics fans, that were really egging people on much, much worse than anything that I would even think to do in a hostile environment like that. And I saw them outside after the game as well. And I mean, I would be surprised if they didn't have a physical altercation with somebody somewhere along the line. But there was one point where they, for the third time, I guess, they got their little Boston sucks chant going. And at that point, it seemed like the game was in hand. So I decided to stand up and start waving my arms in the air and sort of egg them on. And from a couple rows back, somebody yelled out, "Stand up if you want to get stabbed." So they were yelling at me, and they told me to stand up in the parking lot as well and go find them in the parking lot. So I think my life was threatened. How about that?
Did you threaten back?
I didn't run. Yeah, no, I didn't threaten anybody back. I had my Kobe Bryant socks that they gave away at the game. I've got those. Why would I want to threaten anybody and get those dirty?
Well, because your hero, the great Curt Schilling, also had bloody socks once.
My hero. Far from it, sir. Anyway.
Okay, so
the overall point of this first segment for me is really this. Since I was in Oakland for the Warriors game as well, my first experience at Staples Center, actually dealing with a hostile Laker crowd, I feel like if in the same position next year, without Kobe Bryant being on the team, there's going to be nobody in that stadium. And I think that they're filling the seats because of Kobe, and that's fine. I understand people want to go see Kobe, but if those same people are not going to be yelling Boston sucks and getting rowdy for a bad Lakers team next year, then I don't want to have anything to do with those people. And I just don't think that they're very good fans. In Oakland, meanwhile, every single person up there was the most respectful and had the nicest demeanor of any arena that I've ever gone into. New York, Washington, just name all the – Phoenix. Where else have I been? Chicago. All these other places. Golden State was by far the nicest, and it just – it blew me away. Like the meanest thing I heard in that building was, "Sit down, you're blocking my view." And it was like, because the Celtics had gone on a little run and Golden State called a timeout, and she was, this woman behind me was basically, that was her way of ribbing me, was saying that I was in her way, even though there was nothing to be seen. So it was a fun little joke. And that was literally the worst thing that I heard. So it was quite a contrast to travel down to LA and see the debaggery that was going on in that building.
Well, I'm of two minds with this. First of all, yeah, it's easy to be the nicer, the more gracious fans when you, A, don't have a traditional rivalry with that team. Okay, I promise you they wouldn't be reacting the same way if it was, say, the Clippers. And B, it's also a lot easier to be nice when you're the front-running team who hasn't lost one time at home all season.
Now, I will
give credit to the Warriors fans. They have been good for several years. Even you want to go pre-Steph Curry, I remember in particular the Baron Davis led Baron Davis Steven Jackson Warriors. Remember
there you
that
go.
Team?
Yep.
They beat the one seed Mavericks in the first round. I remember in particular thinking that their home crowd there. That I believe this play where Baron Davis dunks on somebody on the Mavericks. I want to say it's Dirk, but it wasn't. It was another tall white guy. He dunks on Andre Kirilenko. He dunks on Andre Kirilenko. I'm sorry, in the Jazz series. That's what it was. And the insanity of the crowd was like it was crazy as anything I've seen. I feel like their fan base is pretty bad for a while. So
yeah, man. I mean, everything that you've heard about positive stereotype that you've heard about the Golden State Warriors arena being the loudest and all that, it's true. I mean, I don't even know if I experienced something that loud when the Celtics won the championship. It probably came pretty close, and people around here might call me a traitor or think this is blasphemous for me to admit, but I'm telling you, at least in the second half of that game, every time Steph Curry hit a three, every time somebody made a big shot or a big play, the entire arena was on their feet and cheering, and they were loud the whole time. And then when the refs made a couple of calls that the fans disagreed with, they were even louder. And so everything you've heard about that arena is true as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and as far as Lakers go, look, they're having their worst season in franchise history. They tied their worst loss ever in that loss to Utah. They've been a disaster. Byron Scott's coaching has been a disaster. There's been some regression. We'll talk specifically about why Lakers fans have turned on the one beacon of hope that maybe this team had going forward, at least barring whatever moves they make in this offseason. So I really can't blame them. At this point in the season, it's like saying farewell to Kobe has pretty much become what the end of this season has been about. You know, it's like, what else could it be about?
Nothing.
And
getting that draft pick,
not
showing up to the games. So that's what I'm saying. I don't blame them for being there for Kobe and having that mentality and wanting to fill the stadium for him. And I would fully expect if things were flipped and it was a Celtics superstar that was retiring, it would be a half empty stadium the next year as well. But the point is that I feel like the people of Boston would be there for that superstar and also want the team to win, whereas the people of Los Angeles, and not even that, and also know who else is on the team, have a little knowledge about the game of basketball, whereas 7 out of 10 fans that I saw in Staples Center had no clue what they were talking about as far as the Lakers are concerned, and a couple of those fans that had no clue were probably Celtics fans. So I don't know. It seems like a large majority of the people that were actually Lakers fans there don't really know what's going on.
But again, re-hit the point, but we're talking market. Kobe, Kobe's retirement.
Kobe is the market.
Kobe's retirement has become an event to go see in and of itself outside the Lakers. There are probably plenty of people there who are not even Laker fans. People who just want to be part of history and see Kobe's last name. Now, just transition a little bit. Speaking of history, Murray, you saw a little bit of history yourself on Friday night. I think it's time for you to share a little bit of that experience.
Yeah, before we get back into the Lakers and what was going on or what's going on with them, the Celtics broke that streak, man. The Golden State Warriors were undefeated at home this season. I think it was, 54 games in a row? the new NBA record for games in a row at home without a loss. And the Celtics went in there, and let me just tell you, on the way there, I heard Jay Crowder was going to be out. And actually, I think I knew that before because he had played against Portland the night before, and they had announced it then, actually, that he wasn't going to play in the back-to-back. And I thought, well, there's no way the Celtics are going to be able to win this game without him. Not just the way that they've been so inconsistent without him over the past 3 or 4 weeks, I didn't think that there was any chance that it was going to happen. And then, all of a sudden, Steph Curry doesn't score in the first quarter. Golden State looks flat for the first half of the game, and the Celtics lead by 2 at the half, and it looks like, well, wait a minute, maybe they have a shot here. And it just turned into, in my opinion, the best game in the NBA all season, and definitely the best Celtics game. So this year I've seen the two best games of my entire life in person, and they've both been against Golden State. So, and that includes any of the playoff games that I saw when on that run to the championship. These were the best played games that I think I've ever seen, and it just goes to show that the Warriors are what they're chalked up to be. They are what everybody says they are, and that in my mind the Celtics have shown that they are a middle of the road team. And that plays up to their opponents and down to their opponents. And they still have fallen into this sort of rut, if you will, on the other end. Because I didn't think that they played too well against the Lakers 2 days later. But then again, maybe the Lakers were playing up. It's this weird thing in the NBA, Calvin. I think a lot of teams fall into it, and it's tough to break out of.
Well, I mean, I think a West Coast road trip is just hard in general anyway, so I'm not going to take too much away from them for winning a game against the Lakers, after, especially, highs and lows coming down off a Warriors win. But let me ask you this question, Ray. So the Warriors, Steph Curry had 7 turnovers in the first half of that game, and he was mostly guarded by Avery Bradley, who didn't guard him as much in the second half. For some reason, they decided to switch Isaiah on him for a lot of the second half of the game, which didn't make that much sense to me. Real quick on Avery, though. Last year, I thought his defense took a little bit of a dip. This year, I feel like he's playing as well defensively, on ball wise at least, as any perimeter defender in the NBA outside of maybe Kawhi. Do you agree with that statement? What do you got with him right now?
Wow, I mean, that's a pretty bold statement because I haven't really seen a lot of the other guys on the perimeter consistently throughout the year. But I think Avery's defense has been as consistent as it's ever been, and he's kind of flying under the radar, and I don't think people are really noticing it because he has Marcus Smart next to him. And I think people look at Marcus Smart as the more aggressive defender, which in turn makes them think that he's the better defender or that he is the one that's leading the way and making it easier for Bradley to defend. And in the past, it may have sounded like I've argued that, but I think that, and I do think that Bradley is a better defender with Smart on the floor, but that doesn't mean that Smart is the better defender. I think he makes Bradley better, but Bradley is much more disciplined this year, and he's been showing that gradually over the course of his career. I don't know if that comes with respect from the referees or what, but he seems to be able to stay in front of his man without fouling much more often this year than he has in the past. So I think that plays into it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's the difference to me between Smart and Avery Bradley is that, Smart is an excellent defender, and he's more of a bulldog, and he can take a charge better than Avery Bradley, sure. But I feel like Avery Bradley's discipline is the difference maker in that situation, where Smart will gamble sometimes. He'll commit that reach and foul.
Gamble a lot.
Yeah, he'll commit that reach and foul. He'll make the occasional. Obviously, overall, his defense is a net positive. His offense, on the other hand, is something else this year. But obviously, he's a good defender. But I just feel like this year, Bradley, the way he's been able to basically stay in front of anybody. In the past, I guess I've been critical of the way he sort of, lazily goes into screens. But I feel like this year he's just fighting through everything. And I don't know. I just wanted to highlight that because I was just impressed with the way he – just the fact that Curry had 7 turnovers in the first half was an incredible defensive performance to me. So,
I thought it was excellent. And I think as far as the second half is concerned, I'm not so sure if it's that they put Thomas on Curry or if they just said, you know what, let's just see if we can get Isaiah going, and said, just play with Steph and Curry and see if you can get into rhythm. And it worked out for the Celtics. Actually, both players, Curry went off in that third quarter. And that was just an incredible performance to see as well. So either way, great game by the Celtics on Friday.
Yeah.
Not so great game on Sunday, but that was really more about Kobe Bryant, and the Celtics still won the game. But I was at that game, as we have both said. One person that I didn't see at the game, maybe I just missed him, Calvin, I don't think he was there, was Nick Young. Has he even been with the team? Go ahead.
I don't mean to step on your transition, but I had one more question for you about the Celtics.
Yeah, fine. That's fine.
All right. Yeah. Nick Young, not on the Celtics. Transition back. Look at that. So right now, the Hawks, Celtics, Heat, and Hornets are essentially in a four-way tie. This is my fault.
This is totally my fault. I should have gone the other way with this because I had something else to add as well. So continue.
Yeah. So right now the Celtics could basically be anywhere from the third to the sixth seed, right? I mean, none of these teams are going to – Indiana's not catching any of these teams. Detroit's not catching any of these teams with five games left or whatever.
The poor Bulls are just out. Oh, my goodness.
So
talk about them another time.
Is 3-6, they're basically all playing each other. I don't think home court, or maybe you disagree, well, home court will be a huge factor in this meet. But my question to you, Larry, is of the other three teams, which of those three teams do you want to see in the playoff? And which one would you be a little more nervous to see in the playoff?
You said Toronto, Atlanta, Miami?
No, it's Toronto's the two for sure. It's Atlanta,
Miami.
Charlotte,
Atlanta, Miami. Well, I'll just start this by saying that the guy I'm going to the game with tomorrow previously was down on this team and didn't think the Celtics were going to do anything and thought they would be out in one round. And apparently over the weekend, something happened because he texted me this morning to say, I've crossed over. The Celtics are going to the East Final, and I believe they have a shot at winning it all. So he's buying into the Kool-Aid of beating Golden State one game. I'll hear more from him tomorrow night and see what he's actually talking about. I think he's off his rocker. But as far as your question is concerned, I think Charlotte is the obvious choice for the team that you'd want to play first. I think they're young. I think that they don't have the experience. They don't even have the experience that the Celtics do of playing Cleveland last year, even though they went out and got swept in that first round. But that is good experience for them to build on. And we've talked about this before on this show, Calvin. People say experience in the NBA doesn't matter, or that coaching in the NBA doesn't matter. But both you and I agree that when it comes to the playoffs, those things do matter quite a bit. I think the Celtics have the advantage in both areas against Charlotte, and that would be the easiest matchup for them as well. The other two are tough because Atlanta has really been turning it on, although they have lost a couple in a row here. They kind of came out of the lower half of the playoff bracket here and have surged recently. That team kind of scares me because, again, coaching, they have great coaching down there, and I think that if they can figure things out, they might be able to patch some things together and actually win a round or two. So I'm concerned with Atlanta. Miami, to me, is really the biggest concern, though, because Hassan Whiteside is the player on all three of those teams that the Celtics really have nobody to match up with. Even Al Horford or in Atlanta, the Celtics, I think, can run with him. If Hassan Whiteside goes off in a series, I'm not so sure that the Celtics stand a chance. So I'd like to avoid Miami at all costs.
Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite of you. You, not with Miami, I sort of agree just because of one of their experience. Two, you're right. Hassan Whiteside has been destroying the league in the second half of the season. I'm sort of the opposite with Charlotte and Atlanta. And the reason being, you're right, I agree with your point about Charlotte not having a lot of playoff experience. But I feel like the Celtics also don't have that much playoff experience. So it's kind
but
of a wash.
I think the Celtics' talent level is better, and their coaching is better, and they do have a little more experience.
You know what would concern me about the Hornets is, one, they sort of want to push at the same pace the Celtics do. But both are also good at getting back, much like the Celtics. But they sort of have every different type of scoring offense. I think that's what interests me about Charlotte. Is Kemba Walker played better than he ever has all year. He's basically, he and Isaiah are essentially the same player, right? Except the difference to me is, like, Kemba at the end of the game is a little bit scarier than Isaiah right now. And then they have, you know, Batum sort of being that swing man, and they have Al Jefferson inside. I don't know. Something about this team intrigues me. I could be wrong. Whereas Atlanta, I feel like the Celtics match up well for them because they don't rebound that well inside. They're not that big. And the Celtics, who are also not big, that big, have turned themselves into a pretty ferocious rebounding team. I just imagine a lot of second-chance points for them in that series.
Yeah, I mean, the Al Jefferson thing is a decent point as well because he's I mean, he would fall into the same category as the Celtics don't really have a guy that can defend him. I think they would be able to defend him better than Whiteside. But I think on the other end, the Celtics would run circles around the entire Charlotte team. I don't think that's a very good defensive team down there in Charlotte. And that's what comes out in the playoffs. You have to lock down and get stops. And Batum is a nice defender. But can Kemba Walker really stay with Isaiah Thomas if he gets into the lane? Can Al Jefferson really defend Kelly Olynyk at the three-point line and not let up a rebound to somebody else on the Celtics? I don't know. It doesn't seem like a good fit for the Hornets to be playing the Celtics as far as they are concerned, not the Seas, of course.
Well, I guess we'll see. Just wanted to get that in because, you know, next week might be the
play. We will see. It's going to be a tight race, though, as I predicted at the beginning of the season. Tight race in the middle. Couple teams at the top, couple teams at the bottom, but a real tight race in the middle of the Eastern Conference. So it's going to be fun to watch it play out here over the next 10 days, really. All right, back to your Lakers here, Calvin. Nick Young was not at that game. I didn't realize that he wasn't showing up to games, but why don't you clue people in as to why that might be happening?
Why he's not showing up to games?
Why is Nick Young not showing up to games? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe he was in the rotation for a while before this incident that you're about to explain happened.
Yeah, he has not been in the rotation for quite a while. And that's mainly for basketball reasons. It's mainly because he's essentially the same player as Lou Williams, but not nearly as good. So why are the Lakers going to play? And especially, you know, in the second half of the season, they've been committed to playing the young guys as much as possible. Make the end of the
couldn't
call
agree more.
Yeah.
I think they're making the right move. Yep.
So, yeah, they have been making the right move. So he's gotten a lot of, you know, DNP CDs in the second half of the season. And, yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Byron Scott saying that, you know, Nick Young's somewhere else in his head. You know, when he's not there, he tries to talk to him. And he's also, you know, known to be as, like, somewhat of a little kid. But I imagine that he's probably pretty depressed. And the reason for that being that a video was leaked recently with Lakers rookie D'Angelo Russell. Obviously, everybody knows about this, but Lakers rookie D'Angelo Russell filming himself interviewing Nick Young, who's watching the television show. D'Angelo asks him about girls that he's seeing on the side. He, you know, mentions a few girls. D'Angelo asks him about Amber Rose, and he says no because she knows my girl. And so the implication is, yes, he's cheating on his girl, Iggy Azalea. It got leaked to the media. D'Angelo Russell has basically taken a bloodbath since then. But this was supposedly right before the Lakers, you know, 48-point loss to Utah, which factored in that. Apparently, people have been freezing out D'Angelo. I guess he came into the locker room, sat next to Lou Williams, who then, like, got up and sat somewhere else. People are not sitting next to him on team planes, leaving him alone. And, you know, at the first game after that, at Staples Center, the fans booed D'Angelo Russell mercilessly.
Okay, so this is where I'm going to stop you and ask a question, because as far as the players are concerned and the guys that are on the team and the guys that he has to work with every day, I can understand where they are coming from as far as shunning him a little bit or trying to make him pay his dues or something like that, because he did take something that was supposed to be, or maybe Nick, I don't know how Nick Young thought was what he thought was going on, or whether he knew that he was getting taped or not, but it was likely that he thought it was a private conversation, right? So he took something that they had talked about in private and he put it out there on the internet, or it was leaked out there by however it got out there. So I can understand where the players are coming from if they don't want to talk to this guy, if they don't trust him, if they don't want to work with him, etc. My confusion is with the fans and the media. Why is Nick Young skating on this? Why is he the one that's the victim? And I understand that about that whole private conversation thing, but he's also in the wrong, is he not? I mean, he's cheating on his girlfriend and admitting to it, or his fiance and admitting to it. So, I mean, he's also in the wrong here, and he seems to be skating by the fans and the media. And to me, that's just ridiculous. I mean, if Lou Williams doesn't want to talk to D'Angelo Russell because he thinks that whatever he says is going to get leaked out, that's totally understandable. But for people to be booing him and then sort of putting Nick Young up on a pedestal in the media seems to be outright or just totally outrageous to me.
I mean, well, here's the thing. Like, I don't know. I think whether Nick Young is cheating on his girlfriend or not is, like, is that really any of our business? Probably not. You know what I mean? It came out. It's like, all right, it came out. It is what it is. But I don't think that reflects one way or another on whether or not, like, we should judge D'Angelo Russell. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think, like, Nick Young cheating on his girlfriend, like, that doesn't mean he deserves what he gets, or, like, that's between him and her. Unless he's close friends with her or he owes her something.
Right.
I don't think, like, you know, if hypothetically, if you were cheating on your girlfriend, would you deserve, you know, one of your friends calling her up and telling her? You deserve what you deserve on your end, but, like, that doesn't mean that your friend wouldn't be a douchebag for making that same move. But I think as far as D'Angelo goes, I think, yes, you know, making a video intentionally and then setting your friend up and then, you know, sending it out, yeah, that would be a problem. But it turns out, like, that's not what apparently has happened. I think people rush to judgment so quickly, but apparently he and Nick Young were best friends. Nick Young made a video prank on D'Angelo in the first place, and D'Angelo just sent this prank to get him back. And it's now come out that, you know, one of D'Angelo's ex-girlfriends got into his phone and sent that video out to the media on behalf of sort of humiliating Icky. Now, I think that even at the time, we didn't have all this information, but the next day immediately, you know, D'Angelo came out, apologized, said he didn't know how it got out. He didn't know at the time that this story about it being an ex of his has broken later. But you can argue that, like, he deserves some responsibility for, like, you know, not erasing this prank he did. But I think people who are, like, treating him like he is a snitch or, like, yeah, that he's, like, he deserves to get stabbed. Like, people around here are, like, he should get, you know, beaten up. People are using terms like code red. And, like,
yeah, man, that's messed up.
Yeah, and he's, like, I don't know how this happened. Like, yeah, yes, there is a video of him talking to Nick Young, but that doesn't mean he released the video. I think if you want to say he should be more responsible with his information, that should be a legit criticism. But that is a legit criticism, but it's not fair to
yeah.
And then say,
I mean,
like,
and also, he's just a kid, right? He's not even old enough to drink. He's 19 or 20 years old. So he's a rookie in the NBA. I'm not trying to make excuses for him. And the new information is that he didn't even do it on purpose. But yeah, this is his lesson now. He has to be more careful with his information. That's not something that he knew before, because he's never had to deal with something like that, I would imagine.
Yeah, I agree with that. He is not. He actually, does seem to be responding to it, you know, better than I thought. He came out in the media. He was completely contrite. I feel like people are talking about how, like, they can, like, athletes will never be able to trust this guy again, and, like, free agents won't sign with the Lakers. I think this will all blow over relatively quickly. I feel bad for Nick Young, who is already not going to be a part of, you know, what was happening in this team going forward. Now it's going to appear to some as if the Lakers, you know, chose D'Angelo over Nick Young, chose this rat over the guy who, you know, got screwed over, got betrayed by him. But, like, that's really just a false narrative.
That's,
it's because
that's not the case at all, because he wasn't playing before, and that's why I tried to lead with that. He was out of the rotation before any of this happened.
Yeah, exactly. He was out of the rotation before any of this happened. I feel bad for him. I feel bad that it happened, but it's one of those things, like, I wouldn't... Yeah, you can give D'Angelo some blame in terms of, like, the intelligence of making and not deleting the video. But beyond that, like, I don't think that, like, D'Angelo is some narc who's looking to, like, ruin people's relationships just for the fun of it. Or, like, nobody's saying he's this malicious guy, and yet, like, we're all treating him like he is just because, you know, the guy code and guys feel bad when other guys get exposed. But you're right. Nick Young was cheating on his girlfriend in the first place. And so... You know, that'll happen sometimes. It's unfortunate it happened like this, but it is what it is.
Yep, he's just got to deal with the consequences and move along, and hopefully it doesn't turn into a situation where his depression or whatever is going on in his head leads to anything worse, and they can work it out or whatever it may be, move on with their lives. Just like we're going to move on right now, and I've not given out the call-in number yet, which I don't know if it matters or not. People should know it by now. Fools. 323-642-1484. Also not doing any live reads or anything, Calvin. I'm just being a rebel without a cause right now. Just doing it that way. Up next. What's next? Greg Hardy? Oh boy, I don't know anything about this. You're gonna have to fill me in.
Right. You're gonna have to read up on this, because Greg Hardy did an interview with Adam Schefter today of ESPN, where he basically denied ever beating his girlfriend. I'm trying to pull up the quote now, because it's just an amazing quote. Let me see if I can...
I have it.
Grab.
I'm not sure which one you're looking for, but I have multiple quotes. You want the link? Have it? All right, here. But yeah, you're right. He's basically denying everything. He's saying he's never put his hand on a woman and things of that nature. But if you have a specific quote in mind, I think it's all right there.
Well, first, he denies ever putting his hand on a woman. He says that he never says... He says that he was raised never to hit a woman. Okay? Any woman, no sir. And then he talks about it being the Bible Belt. Okay? And then Adam Schefter asks him about the... Yeah, you say you didn't do it, but there's pictures of her. And then he stops and says, I didn't say I didn't do anything wrong. That situation occurred, and that situation was handled. Saying I did nothing wrong is a stretch, but saying I'm innocent is correct. What does that mean, Ray?
It sounds like something happened, and that maybe he kicked her or something. He didn't put his hand on any woman.
Oh, like maybe he put a foot. Or maybe he, like...
See what I'm saying?
He, like... Yeah, laid her out with an elbow, like a Muay Thai elbow. Right.
Yeah, maybe it was a headbutt. Maybe he just tackled her with a proper NFL tackle, but didn't wrap her up because obviously he's got to use his hands. The point is, we're not trying to make light of this, but this guy is just a total clown. And I like that Adam Schefter basically called him out for everything. And his answers still make him look like a total clown. Nobody's going to believe this. Nobody's going to look at him in a better light now. I don't think, anyway. Why would they? He sounds like a moron, some of these quotes that he says. Pictures are pictures, and they can be made to look like whatever they want to. What?
It almost sounds to me like this guy, maybe he's been watching the OJ show, and he's, like, trying to do some sort of Johnny Cochran, like, double speak, and, you know, these pictures aren't real. They says, like, that's a thing for the lawyers to decide.
Wait, did you just say this one, too? that situation occurred and that situation was handled. But as a man, you can't avoid situations that aren't your fault or are your fault. So if something's your fault, you just can't avoid it, Calvin. Just do whatever you want. It's your fault. Can't avoid it. That doesn't even make any sense.
Right. God forbid, you know, you ever beat up a woman or two. Or become an NFL player. God forbid either one of those things happened.
Yeah, I don't want to do any of those things, actually.
Yeah. If you were to become, you know, an NFL player who then beat on a woman or two, and you were asked about it, like, you asked for it, even if you were asked to do an interview, I don't understand why the answer is just not no. Why is the answer just not no, I think I'm good. Or we can do the interview, but we can't talk about what happened.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, it's in the past. It's settled. Like, people don't talk about things that have already been dealt with in general. It doesn't matter what kind of a crime or a lawsuit or situation it was. If it has anything to do with the legal system, once the case is closed, people generally don't talk about it. And I know there are some exceptions and information about everything after the fact that comes out and books are written and all that. But in a negative connotation, I'm trying to say, the person that is involved doesn't talk about it unless they have a well-thought-out plan of something to say, or they know they're innocent and it was a wrongful type of thing and they had to settle anyway, etc. This just sounds like he's talking around in circles and not providing any sort of real story or evidence to the fact that he didn't beat his wife or girlfriend, whoever it was. Just the fact that he's implying that the pictures may have been doctored or something like that is ridiculous, because he has a non-answer for everything that Adam Schefter says, basically. So it's an indictment on him, and I hope people don't see him any differently than they did before the interview, because he looks like a total clown still.
I don't get what he has to gain, possibly has to gain from coming in an interview and denying. Does he think people are going to believe him? I just think, he could be this delusional, but, like, doesn't he have people who work for him who can keep him from doing this? It's just ridiculous. Anyway, I'm going to throw a wild card topic at you, really.
Great.
Hall of Fame announcements. Yeah. Well, this is right in your warehouse, so. Hall of Fame announcements, Shaq, Iverson, and Yao Ming. Do you have any thoughts?
Mm-hmm. My thoughts are, I'm surprised that Shaq is going in so soon. Usually guys have to wait a little bit longer after they retire. But I guess he's been out for a few years now. I'm surprised that he is going in this quickly, and Iverson was not in yet at this point. But I think they're all deserving. And the Basketball Hall of Fame, people have to remember, is not a NBA Hall of Fame, which is another reason that all three of them are deserving. Yao Ming for basically bringing the NBA to the rest of the world. Allen Iverson for sort of doing the same, but also changing the way the NBA was played, changing the way the basketball was played in the NBA, and also just being a transcendent basketball player on the streets and just on coming through the NBA and all of that stuff. So he was a legend in his own right, regardless of what people want to say negative about him. And Shaq, I don't know, can you even debate that he's one of the greatest basketball players of all time on any level? I mean, he was a beast. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah. Look, Shaq, obviously, you know, three-time NBA or four-time NBA champion, Hall of Famer. That's fine. Allen Iverson, Allen Iverson, you can put in some question about whether or not he's a Hall of Famer, just because if you want to evoke the longevity argument, I think that he was a guy who broke down fairly young into his career, but when he was dominant, he was a dominant player. I don't really have a problem with it, although I might argue that he's borderline. But I think the thing that puts him in and the thing that puts Yao in both of these cases is the fact that they were iconic, right? They were known for something, you know.
Absolutely.
Iverson known for a certain type of street baller. I would, you know, to me the strongest argument for Iverson being in the Hall of Fame is the practice rant. But I think that sort of embodies, like, the dude that he was, and the fact that he was, like, a small, gritty guy who, like, he was a warrior. Yao Ming,
yeah, everybody,
you know,
knew who he was. If you're talking about fame, straight-up fame and best players out there, I think he's got to be in.
But here's the thing for me, though. Is Yao Ming, like, yes, he was, you know, the world's first foreign-born number one draft pick. He didn't bring the game to millions of Asians because basketball has already been popular in China, but he brought the NBA to millions of Asians, and no question about that, and increased the popularity in China, increased the popularity of basketball worldwide, maybe in a lot of other Asian countries. But I just don't think he was a good enough basketball player for long enough of a time to deserve being in the Hall of Fame. I said it straight up. Yao Ming, he was good.
But you're looking at just the NBA. How long did he play in China before he was there? He played for 5 years in China. He was one of the best players of all time in China, probably the best player of all time in China. And then he came to the NBA for 9 years, and I think he was pretty good. I mean, he was basically a double-double guy with a couple blocks, and, yeah, he was enormous, and didn't win a championship, but he was an 8-time NBA All-Star. So that to me is something. And I think you have to factor those 5 years in China into it as well, because who knows if he had been in the NBA at that point, whether he would have been good or not. I would have to imagine he would have still been a solid player.
Billy, how old do you think Yao Ming is right now?
I know how old Yao Ming is right now. He's 35. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you looking at his Wikipedia page? Is that why? Yeah, well,
I just looked him up, yes.
Okay, that's fine. In his first year in China, he averaged 10 points and 8 rebounds. In second season, he missed most of the season because he broke his foot. Okay? So he essentially had two functional years, okay, in the Chinese basketball league before he got to the NBA. So it's not an Ichiro situation where Ichiro was like the best player in the Japanese leagues by a mile, broke the hit record and then came over to Major League Baseball. He played in essentially what was a minor league for a couple of years, came to the NBA, and obviously, he had health issues. He had really bad feet. Okay. He was a good player. I'm not saying he wasn't very, but if you just look at his numbers, if you're being fair, they're just nowhere near good enough. Particularly, like, the fact that he essentially had, you know, 5 or 6 straight injury-plagued seasons in his career. I don't see how you can put this guy in the Hall of Fame, and the argument is, again, that he brought the game to a bunch of people. But I don't like – that's like – that's gimmickry, man. Like, that's like putting Goose Gossage in the Hall of Fame simply on the base of his mustache.
I mean,
you know?
I don't know. I don't think so, because, he's that famous. He is a basketball player that everybody basically knows. And people – billions of people around the world know who this guy is. So I think as far as the game of basketball, or as far as the game of basketball is concerned, he was good enough for a long period of time, and everybody knows him, so it makes sense to me.
But he wasn't good enough for a long period of time. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
He was 20-10. He was 20-10 for 10 years, 9 years in the NBA.
No, he wasn't. Let me pull up the stats right now. He was not 20-10 for 9 years.
His career, 19 points and 9.2 rebounds. That's basically 20-10, and that, to me, that's a double-double. not officially a double-double, obviously, but the injuries, I don't think it's fair to count his injuries as something against him, because he went down in those years that he was having his better years, actually. He was playing great basketball, and then he would get hurt. I don't think you can take that into account and hold it against him as far as getting into the Hall of Fame is concerned, because the numbers are still there, and he is still that famous figure for basketball.
So are Tracy McGrady and Steve Francis Hall of Famers for you too?
I don't think a lot of people really know who Steve Francis is. First of all, that's a name that people now would have no clue who he is. He's fallen off the face of the earth. And Tracy McGrady is probably a debatable one, but I don't think his numbers were that good. And I think that there were a lot of shortcomings that he had as far as both ends of the floor, playing both ends of the game. Yao Ming was good on defense and on offense. He could play a full, well-rounded game. Tracy McGrady, we both know, was a slacker when it came to defense. He didn't really play any. If you want to nitpick and be critical of guys like that, then that's what I would look at. I would say Yao Ming is a well-rounded basketball player. He's famous, and he put up numbers for, in my mind, good enough period of time that all of that factored in, he deserves to be in.
So your argument is essentially that the term Hall of Fame should be literal. How famous you are should determine whether or not you get in the Hall of Fame. That's basically what you're saying to me at this point.
No, because it's a factor. It certainly should be a factor, though. And because you're not going to be a terrible basketball player and be extremely famous. I don't think people around the world know who Brian Scalabrine is. People around the league may. People around New England may. But even fans in Miami, or fans, who knows, in New Orleans might have no clue who he is because he was that bad. I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame because he reaches X level of fame over the course of a career. I think that it should be a factor in looking at everything else. And if you want me to rank which ones Yao Ming has, his stats would be at the bottom of the list. That's the least credible thing that he has going for him, but I still think it's good enough.
Murray, if I would ask you who's more famous, Isaiah Thomas or Jeremy Lin, what do you think the answer would be? The answer would be Jeremy Lin.
Jeremy Lin, yeah, for sure. Right now, Jeremy Lin, yes. His stats don't make the cut. Yao Ming's stats make the cut. There's no comparison.
Do you really want me to right now come up with a list of guys who have averaged 19 and 9 and really, really dig into whether or not you think these dudes should make the Hall of Fame?
I don't think we have time for that, because most of those guys are probably not as famous as Yao Ming. You're missing the point. It's you have to factor everything in as one.
And Yao Ming played. Yao Ming played 7 seasons in the NBA. 8 technically, but 1 season was 5 games. I'm not counting that. He played 7 seasons in the NBA. 7, Rory. How is that enough to be a Hall of Famer? It's not.
Not that alone, perhaps.
It wasn't because he was old, because he retired 5 years ago and he's only 35 now.
You're holding his injuries against him.
Yes, because he didn't play long enough. Does that have to factor in?
Well, we don't really have time for this. We only have 5 minutes left. I don't know why you're getting so worked up, though.
If he was Shaq dominant, then maybe you could have the – you know what I mean? If he was putting up, 27-10, then you could be like, look, he only played 7 years, but look at those 27-10. I know I'm getting worked up, but I just figured we'd burn out the rest of our conversations for next time. We don't have time to get in something else after that, so I'm just stretching this out for the final.
Gotcha. Well – I don't really feel like arguing about Yao Ming getting into the Hall of Fame anymore. So,
all right, well, then we'll just call it a wrap. We'll just wrap it up.
Yep, let's do it. Good stuff, buddy. And we'll do it again soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio. Follow me on Twitter as well at Team Green Truth. A couple of pictures from these Lakers and Warriors games up there. I'm going to go check those out. It was a lot of fun that weekend. I'd do it again in a heartbeat, and maybe next time I can actually run into you. Calvin, you jerk.
Perhaps. No promises.
Perhaps. No promises. Never any promises. All right. Good night, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. This has been Careless Whispers on CLNS Radio.
Is a New York